Hey gang, welcome to the show. I like to let that music play a little bit. It gets me going. Today, I'm Patrick Slattery. This welcome to the National Bugle Radio. Today, our guest is Mark Collette from Great Britain, author and activist. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's a great pleasure to be back here again with you. I always enjoy joining you on your shows.
And I enjoy having you. And I watched your recent video. You have a YouTube channel, and I suggest everybody check it out. Mark Collette. Oh, I just closed that window. But you have a new video, and it's about, what is it called, the Football Alliance?
Well, the video is called The Football Lads Alliance, Playing for the Other Side, because we have something in the UK that's just sprang out of nowhere called the Football Lads Alliance.
I want to ask you about that. And when people listen to it, I want them to be thinking maybe about the Tea Party movement in the United States 8 or 9 years ago. There might be some similarities. But why don't you tell us about the Football Lads Alliance?
Well, it's a street movement, and that's an important thing. So we'll start with that. It's a street movement. Now, they've exploded out of nowhere, literally out of nowhere. One minute, there was none of them. And on their second event in London, they had estimates ranged from between 40 and 70,000 football fans, as in football lads, at their march and their demonstration. Now, I know what people are going to be thinking. Wow, sort of 40 to 70,000, overwhelmingly sort of white, you know, working class, lower middle class people marching through London against terrorism. That sounds absolutely fantastic. Well, yes and no. Yes and no. And my big problem with it, firstly, is I'm always very suspicious when a group just pops out of nowhere and has those kind of numbers on the street. Because I've been involved in this for 17 years now, and I've been involved in actual political movements where we have tried to raise political awareness of things. We've stood candidates. And I was in my home, well, it's not my home city, it's the city I live in, the city I've lived in for 18 years now. We went from having one candidate to having 33. And that was one candidate in one seat to one candidate in every seat. But it took us years and lots of hard work to get there. And I mean real hard work, like out leafleting 3 times a week all over the city with different teams, wearing down your shoe leather. It was, you know, a real feat to do something like that. So when a group just pops up out of nowhere and instantly attracts tens of thousands of people to get on the street doing something, I often wonder who's behind that. Is there something more to this? Is this group being helped? Now, I've already said it's a street movement. So the first thing that really worried me is when its leaders proudly proclaimed, not just in speeches, but in their literature, that the movement is not political. It's not political. It's just a street movement. It's not there to engage in politics. It's not there to get rid of the government. It's not there to get rid of the establishment. It's just there to raise awareness. But what's it there to raise awareness of? Well, that's a good point. You'd think it was there to raise awareness of, because it's about terrorism, Islamic issues, the threat that Islam poses to Great Britain. Yet when you actually look at what the leadership of this group is saying, they're not saying anything about Islam. In fact, they produced a leaflet for their last march, and I've got a screenshot of it in the video I produced on this. And in that leaflet, they mention far-right extremism more times than they actually mention Islam. And they actually banned 2 of Britain's leading anti-Islamic activists from attending that rally. They banned a woman who runs a group called Mothers Against Radical Islam and Sharia. They said she wasn't allowed to go. And they banned Tommy Robinson, who is Britain's largest anti-Islamic voice. And they banned both of these people on the say-so of a far-left group called Stand Up to Racism. Now, Stand Up to Racism is being run by Diane Abbott, a far-left Labour Member of Parliament, black Labour Member of Parliament, who constantly attacks white people and recently said that in some elections, white people should be barred from standing. Now, she's a Member of Parliament who is virulently anti-white, pro-immigration, and she's the president of a group whose aims and objectives include supporting Black Lives Matter and open-door immigration systems. In fact, they're on their website, they proudly say that they welcome all migrants and all refugees, and there should be no borders. That is what these people stand for. Yet the leaders of the football...
What is the relationship... I just want to clarify. What is the relationship between this black MP and the football lads?
Well, they have been taking advice and orders from her group, Stand Up to Racism. They have allowed Stand Up to Racism to vet the people who can come to and speak at their rally. And not only that, Stand Up to Racism sent a small contingent to the Football Lads Alliance to monitor the event. And reading, I will actually read this from the Football Lads Alliance press release. Bear with me just a couple of seconds while I dig it out. I've got all my little folders at my fingertips. I will read this directly. The guy who runs the event, runs the Football Lads Alliance, the founder, is called John Meehan. So I'm reading this directly from their press release. Mr. Meehan went on to say, "The Football Lads Alliance in no way condones the comments of a handful of unwelcome individuals who verbally abused the Stand Up to Racism protest. The Football Lads Alliance organisers clapped the Stand Up to Racism protesters and sang Stand Up to Racism as the police liaison officers at the front of the march would be able to confirm. The Football Lads Alliance would like to invite Diane Abbott to come and meet with the founder so that she can find out firsthand for herself what they care about, rather than prejudicing them and trying to pigeonhole the people that follow them from all walks of life." Now, when I read that, all of a sudden, alarm bells are ringing. Since when did any genuine patriotic organization admonish their own supporters for confronting a far-left group of protesters who openly call for open borders, the rights of anyone in Europe to come to Britain and stay? They call for refugees welcome. They stand with placards saying, "Say no to anti-Semitism, say no to Islamophobia, migrants and refugees welcome here." That is what this group's all about. This group is about destroying Britain. It's about destroying Europe. It's about destroying Western civilization and replacing the indigenous European people with a flood of third world and African migrants. Yet the Football Lads Alliance leadership want to cozy up with them. This, to me, sets alarm bells ringing. But what makes all this even worse is the Football Lads Alliance, despite cozying up to these far-left groups, despite reading from the government's own playbook, the government's own prevent strategy, and talking up the threat of right-wing extremism, they refuse to even mention Islam. So when you hear their leaders speak, their leaders will say things like, "Oh, there's these horrible people coming to the UK, or horrible people in the UK who want to blow us up." Well, these people are only here thanks to mass immigration, and these people are Islamic radicals, Islamic extremists, supporters of ISIS. These people aren't just random nasty people who one day decided to make a bomb. These people are being driven by an Islamic ideology, or an ideology that adheres to a specific strand of Islam. And they're not even mentioning the enemy. They won't even name the enemy. And this really worries me, because all these lads are going to these events, they're buying their merchandise, because of course the Football Lads Alliance, despite not having a proper website with aims and objectives and a way to join, they do have a merchandising shop, so everyone can buy a t-shirt and a badge and a hat, because after all, they've got to make money, haven't they? But, you know, you've got up to 70,000 people all going to London, all expending a huge amount of energy, time, money and effort to march around in circles supporting a group that doesn't even want any political change, openly admits it doesn't want to get rid of the establishment. All it wants to do, in its own words, is raise awareness. Well, raise awareness of what? We know people are blowing us up. We know we've got a terrorist problem. We know we've got a problem with the Islamification of Britain and the whole of Europe. But these people won't even mention that. And I think this is essentially the state has got a huge hand in this. I believe the state has got a huge hand in this. And I think the state are pulling the strings. And this is an establishment safety valve, which is there to basically let people take out their frustrations, let them let off some steam in a non-political, harmless way, so they all march around, tire themselves out, and go back home with a belly full of lager, thinking they've actually achieved something, when in fact, they've achieved nothing.
So at the beginning of the show, I asked people to listen to this description and with the Tea Party in the back of their mind. And there are differences. There are certainly differences. And I think the Tea Party which originated... it's kind of an offshoot of the Ron Paul campaign. So maybe late 2007 and then 2008 when Ron Paul was running for president. And people came out dressed in Revolutionary War type of jackets and hats. And so it was patriotic, and it was in support of Ron Paul, and I think it was organic at the beginning. I think that first year it was organic. I think then when Barack Obama was elected president, he was inaugurated on January 20th, 2009, and it seemed that the very next day, all of a sudden, Fox News embraced, not just embraced the Tea Party movement, but took it over. And, you know, you had this scene from 2008, they weren't necessarily Tea Party people, but you had Ron Paul supporters chasing Fox's one of their leading anchors, Sean Hannity, through the streets of Manchester, New Hampshire, throwing snowballs at him. So you had had that. Fox wasn't at all associated with the Tea Party movement, but then all of a sudden they kind of parachuted their stars into it. Sarah Palin and others. What was the guy's name? He was on Fox News for a while. It was originally Glenn
Beck.
Yes, and these people all of a sudden became the stars of the Tea Party movement, and you know, the Tea Party movement had been anti-war. You know, it had been anti-Federal Reserve, anti-war, very questioning of Israel. It had libertarian aspects to it because Ron Paul was libertarian, but for sure anti-war, against American imperialism, against the special relationship with Israel, against the Federal Reserve, and therefore kind of a threat to Jewish power. But all of a sudden they put in Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, and it becomes all about balancing the budget and, you know, safe issues. And so now what you're talking about, it does sound as if this movement was never organic, that it was contrived from the start. But either way, they serve the same purpose. In the case of the Tea Party movement, it was a movement that was already moving large numbers of people in a direction that was threatening to the Zionist establishment. In the Football Lads, it sounds like there's a lot of movement going on against, patriotic movement, patriotic sentiment, anti-immigration, anti-EU, and rather than using it rather than capturing an existing organization. It sounds like they're creating a new one and then trying to funnel the public energy into that.
I think that's exactly what it is. And obviously, there's a huge amount of sort of tension at the moment in the UK because of what's happened. You know, we've had a string of terrorist attacks. We've obviously had the horrific grooming scandals where thousands and thousands of young white girls have been abused by Muslims. We've had a rise in acid attacks. We've got the brutal growth of female genital mutilation, which the police even estimate there's been tens and tens of thousands of cases, but not one conviction. Now, obviously, that doesn't affect the indigenous people. That's obviously generally young Muslim girls who are the victims of that. But again, it's very brutal, and the police don't really want to touch it, even though it's a huge human rights violation. I don't really like the term human rights, as you know, but, you know, butchering a girl in that way is just sickening. So you've got all these problems. You've also got the spread of halal food. You've got cruelty to animals. You've got the, you know, the visual Islamification of Britain, mosques popping up, you know, street signs going up in other languages. And people don't like it. And people want an outlet. And I think this is a way for people to march around in circles, express their anger in a very, very mild form. And you can see sort of what's happening when you hear the leaders of this group speak. Now, one of the leaders is a guy called Phil Campion, who claims to have been in the SAS, the Special Air Service, Britain's sort of most elite, or one of the Britain's two most elite units, which are the Special Air Service and the Special Boat Service. And when he makes a speech, I heard a speech that he made at a group called, I think it's Veterans Against Terrorism or Veterans Against Extremism or something like that. So I don't know the exact name. And his speech went something like this. I won't do an impression, or not a particularly good one anyway. He was like, "These scumbags, they're here, they're blowing us up. Scumbags are threatening our future." And I'm thinking to myself, who are these scumbags? You're not really saying. And this buys into something which the government has put forward, which is called the PREVENT strategy. Now, PREVENT is very interesting because PREVENT states that anyone who doesn't buy into British values is an extremist. Now, I'm sure every conservative or people who aren't as switched on as actual nationalists and radicals and patriots like ourselves will say, "Oh, isn't that wonderful? You know, if people come in, they don't buy into British values, they are an extremist and they should learn to fit in." Well, it's very dangerous signing up to any agreement without actually reading the small print. It's like me saying, "Oh, well, we should ban dangerous dogs," and everyone agreeing, and then when I go around and collect all the chihuahuas and take them away and shoot them, people are crying, and I say, "Well, you didn't read the small print, mate. I actually define dangerous dogs as chihuahuas, ha ha ha, and I've you know, taken everyone's dogs, and they've agreed to it unwittingly." And it's pretty much the same with this extremism thing, because they're saying anyone who doesn't buy into British values, which everyone thinks, "Oh, that's wonderful, British values," is an extremist. But they haven't defined British values. And when you actually do read the small print, they're defining British values as multiculturalism, multiracialism, tolerance, multi-faith societies. So what they're basically saying is anyone that doesn't agree with their view of British values, which certainly isn't my view of British values, is a de facto extremist. And this is what the Football Lads Alliance are more or less saying. They're saying that anyone who doesn't believe in multiculturalism, multiracialism, multi-faith societies are essentially extremists. So that really makes me an extremist. And that is wholly unacceptable. And you also note that when they're not talking about immigration, they're not mentioning Islam, they're not actually signaling out any of the actual problems, they're literally just playing to the government's strategy and actually trying to divorce Islam from the problems of terrorism and the other problems that Islam has brought to the West. And this, for me, is extremely worrying, especially when they're getting up to 70,000 people on their march. That's 70,000 people who could be doing something productive, who could be getting behind an actual movement for change or a new political party, could be organising, could be getting involved in community politics, and instead they're marching around London, having a few beers, and getting told off if they actually confront the far left.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. I know we're coming up on the break, but I'm going to start saying it now. If we get cut off, we get cut off. I look at the way I live my life and the way I interact with people. Well, okay, now we are. So we'll be back after the break. My personal revelation.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time.
We are here. This is I'm Patrick Slattery, National Bugle Radio, with Mark Collette, who has been telling us about the Football Lads Alliance, which sounds totally not racist, and that seems to be one of their values, is emphasizing how totally not racist they are. And you know, I think of by my definition of racism, or by any real sensible definition of racism, the way I live my life, I deal with people as individuals and respectfully, and I'm often dealing with blacks and Jews and people of other races, and I just treat everybody the way I would want to be treated. I do think there are differences between groups. I think there are different distributions of various talents. These various talents are distributed differently in one group as opposed to the other. And that can make it difficult for two groups to share a society. So I think that. But basically, I think I'm totally not racist and I'm totally not anti-Semitic. Yet, I've gotten to the point where I think if I'm going to be accused of being racist or anti-Semitic at this point, the response is just whatever, rather than even arguing the point that we've got real concerns. We've got existential concerns. Even if we were to turn around the situation on a dime right now, there is still an awful lot of water under the bridge. And, there's going to be, whether you're in Britain, whether you're in the United States, whether you're in France or Sweden, there's going to be long-lasting and permanent demographic impacts from the history of the past 50 years. There's going to be. And we have every right. We're under an existential threat, and we have every right to talk about our issues, and we shouldn't even waste time on trying to defend ourselves and make sure that everybody knows that we're totally not racist. What do you think of that, Mr. Collette?
Well, the interesting thing is, no one's really asking these people to be racist. That's the funny thing. And the people that they've been banning from their event aren't racists. For example, I talked about a lady who runs Mothers Against Radical Islam and Sharia. Her name's Tony Bugle. Now, she certainly isn't a racist. She's someone who's actually worked with women from Islamic backgrounds who've been in abusive relationships, who have been in forced marriages, and she's actually helped them get to women's refuges, help them out of those situations. And she's worked within the Islamic community to actually help women who have been abused in those situations. Now, the interesting thing about that is calling her a racist would really be a very bad description. Because her work obviously includes people of other races who she's actually helped. Yet, because she mentions Islam so directly, she has been blackballed from their event. It's the same with Tommy Robinson. Now, Tommy Robinson has repeatedly exposed Islam. He's repeatedly exposed the grooming scandal. He has exposed creeping Sharia law. He has exposed the issues of acid attacks. And he's exposed the way that radical Islam has infiltrated many different facets of British society and has started to radicalize a whole new generation of young people. Yet he is someone who is blackballed from these events. Yet he doesn't mention race. In fact, Tommy Robinson has worked with numerous people who are either ex-Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, people of other races who also warn of the threat of Islam. So again, calling him a racist would be extremely disingenuous. I believe the reason they banned him from their events is because not only would he be welcome with their rank and file supporters, but he is someone who is very forward about mentioning Islam. He is someone who's dedicated his life to pointing out the issues and the threats that Islam poses to the Western world. So they don't want him there. They don't want him there because he is linking the terror attacks, he is linking the problems we have in Britain with Islam. And this group seems to want to distance the two. In fact, none of their material even mentions Islam. As I said, their leaflets don't mention Islam. Their website's just a merchandising page. Their Facebook site doesn't mention Islam. They are stopping people attending their event who do. Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Well, we're back. We're back. So, Mark, you were talking about, you know, the demographics in Britain. Do you want to continue, or do you want me to embark on a new round of questioning?
It's up to you, Patrick. I think we've talked quite extensively, obviously, about the Football Lads Alliance. Yeah. So if you want to move on to something new, that would be, you know, that's up to you.
You know, it's very, very useful for Americans and Europeans and British, whether you consider yourself European or not, I don't know. But it's very useful to look at what's going on in each other's countries. The United States, there was a turning point in 1965 with the Immigration Act. But, you know, in other countries in Europe, these turning points might have been a little earlier, a little bit later. But it's just amazing how fast things have changed. Now, at least in the United States, you did have a large, when I say large, you had a sizable black minority, 20 million blacks out of about, you know, under 200 million people in the 1960 census. So it wasn't an all-white country, but it was definitely a white country. Britain, you know, I've been to Britain a few times, but much of what I know of it is from watching TV. I loved British TV, and I watched a lot of The Saint. I've seen every Saint episode with Roger Moore. And, you know, well, that's fiction, but he'd be going around Britain. It was all shot in the stage, you know, in the sound stage, but what was reflected in The Saint or in Upstairs, Downstairs, or in, you know, Monty Python, the street scenes there, or these other comedies, whether, you know, Are You Being Served or Blackadder, or even going into the 80s, Waiting for God. There's a lot I watched. And it was a white country, keeping up appearances. It was a white country. And I went to Britain in 1984, and it was still a white country, except here and there. You know, you had a lot of neighborhoods of London obviously weren't white already. And I mentioned Wolverhampton on a previous episode, and, you know, it was already, things were already changing. But it's amazing how fast things have changed in Britain and some of the other countries on the continent, how fast they have changed at a furious pace. And then, of course, over the past two or three years, you saw this new phenomenon of the unarmed invasion, just the so-called refugees, these massive columns walking through towns, walking through country lands, you know, country landscapes, it just in enormous numbers, and it's going to have this permanent impact on the demographics. But Britain in particular, and when I say Britain, England in particular, because I understand the migrants who come to Great Britain, come to the United Kingdom, want to be in England. They don't want to be in so much in Scotland or Wales or Northern Ireland, right?
No, it's really, really hit England hard. I mean, if you look at London, London is already a place where, you know, native Brits are a minority. Same with Birmingham, which is the second largest city. And I'll throw in some sort of facts here. I don't know if I've mentioned this before on this particular show, but last year alone, 850,000 immigrants came to Britain. Now, that's more immigrants coming to Britain in a single year than came here between 1066, when we were last invaded, and 1939, which was the beginning of the Second World War.
And I want to ask, what's the population of the UK, and then also what's the population of England?
Well, the UK population, they claim, is around 60 million, but there's varying claims of somewhere between 60 and 70 million, because we've got a huge problem here in that obviously the census data in the UK is the census are only filled out by people who are law abiders. Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, law abiding citizens who fill out the census, and you have you know, illegal immigrants and non-law abiders don't fill out the census. Mm. And the problem with that is you end up in a situation where you have the people who's obviously growing the population most rapidly, the people who are flooding in, the people who are having often the largest number of children, who are your immigrant populations, are not filling these things out accurately. So you can never truly say. And when you look at migration, you know, you've got 850,000 coming in last year. Of the split on that, 650 are people who came in through legal channels, and 200,000 are people who came in illegally that we don't even know where they are. And that's a conservative estimate. That's a government estimate. So the government is saying 200,000 sneaked in. Well, you might even be able to as much as double that. You never know, because they're not going to give you figures that make themselves look more incompetent than they are they, really? You know, their job is to make themselves look like they're doing a good job, which they're obviously not. And that's obviously a huge, absolutely huge problem for us. So you see this sweeping demographic change. You see it happening extremely quickly. The population growth, you can see by just going to any major city. You know, try driving to work in the morning. Try getting a train. Try getting on the subway in London. You know, it's a difficult thing. So you're facing, really, all of these problems. And the government have literally no solutions to any of them. In fact, the government are obviously aiding this, because the government are, you know, puppets of the insidious internationalist clique who want to destroy us. And when you take all of this into account, you end up in a situation where you can clearly see that, you know, we as a people are very rapidly being bred out of existence. And the scary thing is, when you talk about indigenous birth rates, the birth rates of the indigenous people are very, very, very low. In many cases, they can be seen as low as 1.3, which is a demographic catastrophe. So we've got this growing population, and who's growing it? Well, it's immigration on one hand, and it's the birth rate of the immigrant communities when they get here. So you've got this sort of double-edged attack on us, and our people are literally dying out. So whilst the sound of immigrant children will fill the streets, the sound of old white people coughing and spluttering will fill the retirement homes. And you've got this demographic shift. So the people who are the rightful descendants, heirs to Britain, will not be the ones inheriting it. The people inheriting it will be Middle Eastern and sub-Saharan African immigrants. It's a terrible state of affairs. And they're now actually openly calling this replacement migration. The plot is to replace the British people.
And, you know, so that's something new, that they would be calling it replacement migration. But you know, one of the fairy tales is that people come in, they adopt British values. You were talking about what British values mean to them earlier in the show, but in America, America's a proposition nation. People come in and they embrace our values, and they become American. In fact, you know, they're maybe even more American than us. Yet, at the same time, the cultural elites, the largely Jewish cultural elites, are spreading as much animosity towards the white people as they possibly can. And so the idea that, which wouldn't be okay with a lot of people anyway, I mean, there's no reason why it should be okay if these people were coming and replacing us but carrying on our traditions. But of course, that's not even the case. They're coming, and they're being incited against us. They come. They probably don't have very good attitudes towards us anyway. But their attitudes are hardened. More hatred is incited, and this is evident in the fact that, you know, the first generation, the people who were born in the United States of, say, Mexican parents, or the people, especially the people born in Britain of Muslim parents, Muslim immigrant parents, tend to have harder attitudes, don't they? They tend to be more responsible for more crime, don't they? I know that's the case in France.
No, that's definitely the case in the UK. We've got this huge problem now, absolutely huge, where the government have been telling us, or selling us, shall we say, not telling us, selling us this lie of integration. And that's been the big government lie. It's all going to be about integration. It's all going to be about them coming here, and the first generation of immigrants, they might not fit in well. They might not get on with us. Let's face it, they're going to be different. They'll come from a different place. They'll have different values. And yeah, you know, things might not rub along so well initially, but when they have children, their children will grow up. I said, he said blow up there. That was a bit of a Freudian slip, wasn't it? Their children will grow up to be just like us. You know, they'll watch the same things on TV. They'll all play computer games. They'll become materialistic and hedonistic like our youngsters are. And before you know where it is, you know, we'll all be rubbing along, and it'll be a mighty fine world that we all live in. Now, that's obviously not the case. That's not the case at all. In fact, you know, it's not happening. In fact, you can actually see that the majority of these terror attacks carried out in the UK are actually from, or perpetrated, should I say, by second or third generation immigrants. They've, you know, the Manchester bombing was a guy whose family had come over here from Libya, and he had been brought up in the UK. He was one of these people we were told would integrate, would become a part of British society, would grow up to be just as British as roast beef and Yorkshire pudding and get along, and it'd all be mighty fine. And, you know, he'd embrace our ways of life, yet he didn't. He blew up, you know, little girls going to a concert, and it's shocking, you know, absolutely shocking. But the fact of the matter is, it really does blow apart the idea that when these people come here, they integrate. Now, let me tell you how integration works, because this is really important. It's important to deconstruct the myth of integration. Actually, first-generation immigrants often integrate far better than people who come in, or people who are born here or come in later down the line. Let me explain why. When you come over and you settle in a city in the UK, and there's one or two of you, you have to fit in. You can't not fit in. If you don't at least learn the language and make an effort to be part of that society, part of that community, part of that way of life, you're shunned. And there's not enough of you there to sustain a community of your own, because there's only a handful of you. Now, when these groups grow, like they have in places like London and Bradford and Leicester and Birmingham, they have the numbers then. So they don't need to integrate. All of a sudden, it's not just one or two who have to get on, because it's one or two out of, you know, a city of hundreds of thousands. All of a sudden, it's 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 of these people in a city of 100,000. And they make a city within inside a city, a city in a city, a community in a community. And then their kids go to their own specialist schools. They go to their own places of worship. They shop at their own shops. They do business with their own people. They listen to their own community leaders. And before you know where you are, they don't step out of their own communities. Their street signs are in their native language. Their shops, their magazines, their books are all in different languages.
And then you have to ask the question, what's the point of them having the community in Britain rather than in their own, their homeland?
Well, the point of them having it in Britain is we give them huge amounts of welfare benefits. That's all it is. You know, and the way these people the way these people claim benefits is unbelievable. In Britain, only one in five adult Muslims are in full-time employment. You've only got one in five people who've got jobs. So the rest of them are entitled to some form of benefit. Now, that's a huge amount of people. You've got this massive population that's growing and growing and growing, yet only one in five of them are in employment. So the rest are claiming some form of benefit.
It's amazing. Now, we've got this huge Hispanic population, and they're Catholic by and large. So it's not as foreign a religion. You know, there was already a lot of America was already probably a quarter Catholic, so that wasn't a huge shock. They speak a Indo-European language that's relatively close to English. They can learn English easily enough. And many of them, especially the ones from Cuba, but some from Mexico, are predominantly European ancestry anyway, although others have, significant either African or American Indian, Amerindian genetic element. But even so, because their numbers are so huge, you know, when their numbers were small back in 1960, they weren't even on the listed as a separate category in the census data, and there wasn't the problem with their integration. The kids would not grow up speaking Spanish. They grew up speaking English. But once you had these new populations and they were so big that they could form their own barrios, their own communities, you get second generations who may speak English, but they continue to speak Spanish. They don't integrate, and they have a chip on their shoulder. You know, often the first generation comes and maybe they did come to work and they're happy for the opportunity to work. But then their kids grow up, they go through public schools where they're being taught how horrible it was for white people to have a border with Mexico, to not just have open borders, or how horrible it was, the Mexican-American War, where the United States gained a great deal of territory from Mexico. Now, that was not accompanied by any ethnic cleansing. The people who lived here, it was very, very sparsely populated, and the people who lived here at the time, whether they were Indians or Spaniards or a mixture, they remained here. So But they're taught and indoctrinated with this anti-white mindset, and here you are 50 years later, and now you've got this massive community that is very hostile to the indigenous population. When I say indigenous, I'm talking about the population the founding population of this country.
No, well, that's another thing. I mean, people say to me, oh, well, not all these people are culturally hostile. You know, we have a large sort of African...
Okay, we'll get to that right after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks.
We are back. I just have a few more minutes. We talk a lot about the history. We talk a lot about what's going on now, current events. So, Mark, I know you've been involved in the British National Party. You're involved in a lot of movements. You've got 17 years as an activist. You're a young man, but that's quite a lot of experience. What do you see? What kind of possible future can you see if you put on if you put on your optimist's hat? What is the best possible outcome that you can realistically foresee for Britain?
Or for anyone? I'm not sure if I have an optimist's hat. I'm not sure if I've got that one in the closet today. Now, if I was being optimistic, I would say we have a good few years to turn things around. That's an optimistic outlook to say we do still have time to turn things around. And that's really about as optimistic as you can get, because unless we turn things around, that is the end of the indigenous British people. And unlike America, which you rightfully called them the founding people, and they were the founding people, but not the indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of slight difference you've got with Britain. Right. Is that we do have an indigenous people. We do have people who were here from around the time of the last ice age. Mm. And soon they won't be. You know, and there's always the lie that's told that we are just a nation who will have wave after wave after wave of immigration. But that's simply rather untrue. You know, it wasn't a case of wave after wave after wave of immigration. We were a distinct and individual people. Sure, people did come here, but those who came here were very, very similar to us, and they were in very small numbers, and as such, they assimilated. And now, as we said, even though when you talk about the black population, some of the blacks who come here, they're the good people, they're Christian people. And again, the first generation of black immigrants who came here seem to be markedly better than their offspring. Their offspring, unfortunately, have been warped by the same influences that have warped young white children. You know, they've had rap music, they've had the media, they've had all these influences, bad role models, and of course, they're often they're a community that's often affected by a large number of single parent families. So they don't have a stable home life or father figure in the home. And the problem with all of that is it's raised a huge problem of criminality amongst black youth. And that, again, poses a threat to the indigenous population. And even if these people were, you know, Christian and law-abiding, I still wouldn't want them breeding us out of existence, because they can't integrate and they can't assimilate in the way, you know, maybe a group from northern France could, or a group from Germany.
Okay, well, we'll have to pick up this conversation hopefully sometime very soon. You'll come back. There's a lot more questions I have for you. And I want to thank you for coming on. And I want to tell everybody, please check out Mark Follett's YouTube channel. It's very interesting.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. Exclusive.